Welcome to The Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. Jack Hutchins is back again for today's episode. How are you doing, Jack?
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me. Yeah, all good. Just got off the bike. A 2.5 hour session there with some kind of upper zone 2 intensity work there. And my biggest concern at the moment is actually managing the humidity of my apartment because we're both on the coast here in Portugal. The humidity is so high. So when you add in an indoor training session into the mix, it's hard to manage that one. How are you doing though?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I've had a decent couple of weeks since we spoke last of training. Definitely feeling the fitness improving again after that kind of long layoff I had with illness. Yeah, the humidity, it's a killer here, but at least now it's definitely not hot or even warm. So at least that's something. Have you recovered reasonably well from your injury at this point then?
Yeah, training-wise, back to 100%, I would say. Just a little bit kind of cautious with a few things. My biggest fear each day is having to sneeze, because that's still, if anyone's had a chest injury, you might be aware that when you have to sneeze and cough, it's excruciating. So I'm doing everything I can to keep the allergies at bay at the moment.
Yeah, actually that reminded me, and talk about the humidity and the weather. I did have a pretty interesting trail run. I think it was Sunday by the time we record. So 5 days ago, we record here, 6 days in advance on when this episode will go out. But I was doing a trail run, and there's one river crossing that I do, which where you get to basically not quite knee deep water in normal circumstances. But in this case, we've had quite some rain. So actually I got to that crossing and started getting in there, and I was up to my hips in water, and I wasn't even halfway across yet. And I could tell that it would only get steeper, and it was also, the flow was really strong there. So I was actually getting a bit afraid that I was going to be, it's not a deep or big river or anything, but I didn't want to fall and, I don't know, hurt myself or just get cold in general because the water was freezing. So I had to turn around, and then it was a pretty long detour to get to another place where I could actually get across on without entering the river and then running home. So my 24-kilometer run ended up being almost 29, and I also spent quite some time there trying to find a closer river crossing, but that I didn't end up finding. So which made me go all the way around. So that's my big adventure, I guess, from the last couple of weeks.
Oh man, that sounds fun. It's like the swim run Otello training there. At least it's not super cold though, right? In that, I would hate to be doing that in one of the northern European countries, getting up to my hips or waist in water. But yeah,
and it was a sunny day, which we haven't seen the sun in a few days now, but that was a sunny day, so that helped a lot to dry up quickly. You mentioned your zone 2 intensity that you did on the bike. I'm sure all listeners were wondering, well, what is your zone 2? What power do you ride?
I mean, this was kind of close to LT1, which historically, as you know, when we've done tests in the past, it's been 310 to 320, my LT1, but I wanted to be considerably below that just to make sure that it's not creeping up. So I did the kind of session, if you can call it that, was 2 hours, 280 watts. And yeah, I did a spot check at 1 hour, and it was 1.8 millimole. So I think it was about right, and heart rate around 130 beats per minute for that one. So in the TT position as much as I can, because with the chest, I've been having a little bit more discomfort in the extensions. So I'm just kind of trying to build up the time back in the bars. Also have a relatively new position. So yeah, a bit more aggressive, trying to get the conditioning in the TT bars, holding the good head position, and doing some aero drills as well throughout that, just to break it up. I also rewarded myself with a precision fuel and hydration chew every 20 minutes, and I think that got me through.
Nice. We'll talk about precision fuel hydration in a bit, but TTS 2026 is the discount code, 15% off your first order. Yeah, there's one thing before we get into the main topic for today that I also wanted to talk about, which is, as listeners may have heard on last week's episode, I published a survey, basically a quick three-minute survey with a bunch of questions, but nothing open-ended that is mandatory to answer, just a lot of multiple choice questions, essentially, that I link to in the episode description here. So you can go and take that survey. And that is basically for us now to get listener feedback and help make the content as good as possible. We're even asking about things like ads, the ad experience and things like that in the survey. So I've had quite a lot of responses already. So thank you so much to everybody who has responded. It's super helpful. Honestly, can't tell you how helpful that is. And it will for sure have an impact on how we tweak. That's not to say that we're going to do wholesale changes to the podcast or anything, but it's always just like in training, you need to do some testing or assess where you are at some points. And that's what this survey helps us do at this point. And so anybody who wants to have their say in basically what you think is good, what could be improved, what you think we should do more of or less of, that survey is the place to go. And I'll keep it open for another week or so from when this episode goes up before doing any deeper analysis and starting to take any actions on it. So yeah, that's the call to action. Go and take the survey. That's super helpful if you do that. I do have two comments that already came in from the respondents that I want to address quickly. One listener asked, does it matter for you which app I use to listen to? So that I think refers to any sort of ad revenue or other types of revenue. And the answer there is no, it doesn't really, as far as I can think of right now anyway. And the second question that I wanted to address was, so basically you can listen in any app you want. Although I do like Spotify just because then you can respond to the poll there that we put after every episode about what you liked about the or how you liked the episode. Was it really good? Was it good? Was it okay? Etc. Was it not good? So Spotify is good for that. YouTube is also quite good, of course, because we're trying to grow a bit on YouTube. And so that's helpful for that reason. So I guess if I have to pick two, then it's Spotify or YouTube, but it doesn't matter at all in terms of revenue for the podcast. The second question I wanted to address there was somebody said that I've been having issues accessing the podcast on Apple Podcasts for months. And that is a strange one to me because more than half the listeners are listening on Apple Podcasts based on my stats. So if this listener who wrote this can get in touch with me directly, write me an email, then we can try to look into that and see what's going on there. And a couple of final things to just make you as a listener want to go and take the survey that I thought were quite interesting topics that I'm asking about and that the responses have been interesting regarding is the episode format. So what you think about interview format versus co-hosted versus solo episodes. That's been really good gladly for us and for me as well personally, because I like doing the co-hosted episodes. The co-hosted episodes seem so far to be quite a bit more popular than the solo episodes, which means that maybe the solo episode is something that can take a bit of a backseat if that trend continues when we get more responses. And the other one is the ad format, host read ads like we do with Precision versus programmatic ads, which depending on where you're listening, what device you're listening on, you might hear programmatic ads. And the premise behind doing programmatic ads from the beginning was that I actually felt that a lot of listeners would appreciate as unbiased a podcast as possible with as few directly endemic ads as possible. But actually, from the response so far, that seems to be the exact opposite, because most of the responders so far seem to don't like the programmatic ads at all, whereas host read ads seem to be doing quite okay in that regard. So again, I'll keep the survey open for quite some time, or for a week at least, before doing drawing any conclusions. But that's something for sure that I would look into if that trend continues, to perhaps definitely try to replace the programmatic ads over time with host read ads, even though that's not something that can be achieved instantly. It takes some time to get there, but it's definitely possible in the medium term, I would guess. So yeah, so a couple of interesting questions there. So if you want to impact the conclusions that we draw a bit later on in those on those topics, then go and take that survey. Thoughts on that so far, Jack?
Yeah, all sounds good. Glad to hear that the co-hosted episodes are doing well in the survey. But yeah, I would urge the listeners to get involved if you haven't already.
Yeah. So let's move on to the main topic, power rankings, like we did for swim sessions a couple of weeks ago. Now we're doing that for bike sessions. And I'll start because just like last time, I couldn't choose between number 6 and number 5. Well, I did choose between them in the end, but I did want to mention my number 6. So that's essentially a bonus. So my bonus session is doing a virtual race. Anything between 15 to 60 minutes, I think, is usually where the sweet spot is. Or using platforms like Swift, Ruby, Training Peaks Virtual. There are lots of platforms now that offer racing. And this, to me, is just a great way to do a really hard session where you can more easily maintain motivation to really push to the end. The duration of the race and the course will dictate a bit where the physiological focus is. Also, you know, things like how many cyclists are in the race. For example, the last couple of years, I've been using Ruvi as my go-to indoor platform, and racing on Ruvi has been often quite threshold focused because many of those races aren't that many people in there. So you don't have maybe as many attacks flying all the time. You're basically finding a small group and you're trying to stay in that group. That also depends on the course, though. If you have a very punchy course, then it ends up being more of a VO2 session. And of course, shorter courses end up being more VO2 focused versus longer races that end up being more threshold focused. So you can even, based on the type of physiological effect you want to have from your session, you can choose the race accordingly, based on the different platforms you're using. If you have Training Peaks Premium, you have Training Peaks Virtual included in that, and you can use that to look into what different racing options are available and use something like Swift, Ruvi. I think my Whoosh has racing. There's just so many options now. So yeah, that's a really good session in my opinion. Obviously, you know, it's a hard effort, so you need to balance the training around it appropriately. But on the bike, sometimes a really hard effort isn't a bad thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, nice. You got a lot more experience there with the racing than myself. I think I've only done one in my whole life. But yeah, I think if it's going to help with motivation and get through the week and get some intensity, and otherwise you might really struggle to do, then that's a great thing. I guess I would echo what you said about the intensity and maybe use them a little more sparingly than trucking in one every week or even more than that, because it could probably take away from your other goals. Or
yeah,
but no, I think that's a great one there. So I will go into my number 5. I'm actually interested to see if we have any duplicates today, because we haven't discussed each other's sessions. So I wouldn't be surprised if at least these sessions are exactly the same. But so my number 5, I'm going to start off with kind of ironically a race specific or race simulation session that you would do, you know, as close to a race as possible. So right towards the end of a macro cycle or a kind of to the season. And it's going to be a 70.3 specific session. So 5x20 minutes, 2 to 4 minutes rest. And this could start off at a pretty consistent or relatively flat in terms of power. And we're just looking at typically 80 to 88% or so of your FTP, or for more of a kind of high-end athlete, but it probably would be lower than that for more of an intermediate or beginner. And as you get closer to the race, I would then look to add in some more of a simulation type, so kind of more stuff to those 5x20 minutes. So I'll be looking at the demands of the course and the power required. Using best bike split works well, and I like to match each rep with a section of the race. So if we know you're going to have to work hard out of T1 and then settle in, that might be kind of a little bit above the average power for the first half of that first rep, and then settle in, and then you might hit a climb kind of towards the second quarter of the bike course. So then that might be some lower cadence out of the saddle stuff, and then you might have a faster section off the back of that climb. So that might be more of an aero focus, where we're really looking to hold a good position at slightly lower power, and then and so on, basically. So it's a 70.3 race simulation or specific session, where the stuff that you add to each of those 20-minute reps changes based on the course demands. And yeah, you can get creative in that as well.
Yeah, I love that. This one is not a duplicate on my list, but it's definitely a session that I use and prescribe. So yeah, that don't really have anything else to add there. Great session. I guess the only thing to add is that maybe you don't start with 5x20 minutes. You build up to that. You start maybe 4x20 is fine, I think, to start with, because it's not as if it's super, super high intensity. It shouldn't be, because then you can't really ride 90 kilometers for that duration. But yeah, maybe start with 4x20, build up to 5x20. Even some athletes might do 6x20, but that depends. If you finish the race in 2 hours, I tend to not give 6x20, because I don't want to do the whole race duration in training. But if you're going to finish the Sanyo 3 bike leg in 3 hours, I wouldn't be afraid to do 6x20 as a race simulation session, because the relative intensity will be a bit lower as well.
100% agree. And it's also a good one to add a runoff as well, sparingly when required.
Yeah. Right. My number 5 is a ride that I call the Winfield Almqvist endurance ride. So that's based on the lead author of some scientific publications on this type of session. It's essentially just an endurance ride, a longer one. Ideally, I would say at least 2 hours, but in the research, it's been typically 3 hours or 4 hours. And every hour, you would include a set that consists of 3 sprints. I use 20-second sprints with all with 4 minutes recovery, and they're all out sprints done seated. So you would do 40 minutes of endurance riding, then you would do 3x20-second sprints with 4 minutes between sprints. And then you repeat that it's 40, 45, whatever it ends up being. Yeah, like maybe more like 45, actually, to get to an even hour, finish the sprint set on an even hour. And you repeat that. If you do a 3-hour ride, you do that 3 times. If you go longer, if you do a 4 or 5-hour ride, maybe I would adjust the sprint set a bit and either do slightly shorter sprints, 15-second sprints, or do only 2 per hour. Because, yeah, you don't necessarily need to accumulate that much time of all-out sprinting. It's more about the metabolic disturbance on every hour throughout a longer ride to get an additional stimulus to the benefits you're already getting from the endurance riding. In the original research, the sprints were 30 seconds long. But this was done in elite cyclists, and cyclists have a much higher W prime, so anaerobic capacity, than triathletes, meaning that a 30-second sprint is a bit more tolerable for them. So I wouldn't go for that long sprints in triathletes, typically who have lower W primes. So my application of the science tends to be to use 20-second sprints, although that it's fair to say that that's not the exact protocol that was used in the research. But I think this is a great session. It can be used throughout the year, because when you get to later on in the season, when you do a lot of specific work, actually that kind of neuromuscular effect of the sprints can be really good maintenance. Earlier in the season, a lot of the research has focused on that these cyclists manage to maintain a lot of their capacities, like their 20-minute TT power, without doing any sessions in their base training phase when they just did endurance riding, but they included some sprints. So that was, I think, the first paper that came out on this session. So there are many different use cases for it. I think we talked about this with one of the swim sessions I had two weeks ago, that when you for most athletes, you have a low anaerobic capacity, a sprint is not going to be so taxing on you. I would, however, be careful with this type of session. If you have somebody who's more of an anaerobic monster and can go really deep in the sprints, then it's definitely something that you need to manage more carefully than the typical more flat power duration curve type of triathlete or cyclist.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And how many of these session types would you be included, or would you kind of, how long would the block be that you would typically use this in a long course triathlon?
Yeah, honestly, this is something, it's not, I'm not saying that I'm using it on a weekly basis, but I think I'm using it more, maybe not so much in a block format, but actually every once in a while I replace what would be a normal endurance ride with say a spiced up endurance ride with these sprints when I feel like there's enough margin in the athlete's load management that it's not going to push them over the edge or anything like that, which typically is enough margin, like in very few athletes I would want to have that close to the edge anyway. So yeah, it's every once in a while, I would say. It's good for, even just for motivation, it's a bit of a different session. So yeah, I think it can be used throughout the year, like I said, but it doesn't need to be used every week. I would say that based on the research, doing it during the base training phase early on, especially when you're still maybe not really doing a lot of intensity, you're building up to doing it, it can be a really good maintenance. So I do tend to use it more in the early stages of the base training phase.
Nice, yeah, I like it.
Let's take a moment here to thank Precision Fuel Hydration, our sponsors. So you can find them at precisionfuelhydration.com. And I want to mention that, because it's been a while since we talked about that, but they do have free video consultations. So if you have any questions about your training or racing nutrition hydration, you can book a free 15-minute call with their athlete support team, who are really, really knowledgeable and really good. And they're not going to do a pitch or a hard sell on their products. There, you can sign up for these consultations even if you don't plan on using the Precision Fuel Hydration products, but it can be really helpful for you to figure out things like how many grams per hour or carbs make sense for you to use in your goal events, or how much sodium, or what is maybe the testing that you should do to figure this out. Do you need to do some sweat testing to figure out some issues you might be having, whether it's cramping or fading later on in races? A really good service that I can highly recommend, and I've taken it a couple of times myself. So check it out on precisionfuelhydration.com. And if you do want to buy any other products, which we love those products, of course, use the code TTS2026 to get 15% off your first order. All right, Jack, your session number 4.
Nice. So this is a classic one. It's the VO2 max micro intervals, and the set that I've gone for is the classic bent. Ronestad, is that how you pronounce his name?
Ronestad.
So we got 3 sets of 13 by 30 seconds at about 120% of FTP, and then 15 seconds kind of off, but it's not fully off, around 60% of FTP. And yeah, 3 minutes or so between sets. This is the, I guess, more elite version of this session that I would prescribe. And I scale it down. So in terms of the recovery, I would stretch out and use the 30-30s or 40-20s as well. But I mean, we're basically looking at the same outcomes. The reason why I like the session is the heart rate obviously rises, and then you get the oxygen demand, but the lactate doesn't accumulate, right? Because of the intervals are so short, so you never have, in the same way that you would do if you were doing a long rep VO2 max session and you really get that kind of massive acidosis, it doesn't happen, and it makes it a little bit more applicable and repeatable within the context of a triathlon training program. So yeah, I think in terms of execution, I do like to stress that it's not completely all out and you shouldn't be completely on the floor, but it's still almost at that point, and you can really accumulate a good amount of time at close to VO2 max, which is not the same, or it's a lot more taxing to do that with other more classic VO2 max sessions. That being said, I still use this session relatively sparingly, so I tend to do a more of a block approach, where kind of a VO2 max special block, which we talked about in the past, where I'd use this session type, and not, I don't tend to have it long term in anyone's program. But yeah, that's my session number five.
Yeah, I love this session. It is on my list a bit later on. It's the VO2 max session that I prescribe the most of any session. And I think it's probably the most well-researched bike session, not just VO2 max session, but bike session in general. Mm-hmm. There is, I would say, there's so much research on it. Actually, just today, as we're recording, the Knowledge is What Substack had an article on micro intervals that featured this, among others. So yeah, I think you said everything there is to be said. Or one thing actually that I would add is what you said about it not accumulating as much lactate. This is one of the reasons I love it, especially for triathletes, because for triathletes to do something like 5x4 minutes or 4x5 minutes is, you know, your power has to be quite low. You can't go that high above threshold because you just don't have that same glycolytic capacity and the W prime to do that. And that can be quite limiting in terms of the time that you achieve at a high oxygen uptake, at a high VO2. But this session, because you do have those micro rests, and it like you said, the VO2 rises quite quickly because the intensity is so high, but you can achieve that because it's not as reliant on using lactate for energy or lactate production to drive energy production there. So that's, I think, for in general for more slow twitch profile athletes, I think micro intervals are preferable for VO2 max training than longer intervals. But I do use a mix of longer and micro intervals if for, let's say, well-rounded profiles that are not completely flat power duration curves or so. But yeah, this is my favorite VO2 max session, so I do like that you have it on the list, as do I. So my number four is also a classic, but it's a classic on the threshold side of things, and the one that I've gone for here is 10x4 minutes at 95% to 100% of FTP or critical power with 1:20 rest. So that's a straight 3:1 work to rest ratio, which I tend to use for threshold intervals on the bike, no matter what the duration is. And the rest intervals would be easy spinning. So I tend to prescribe 35% to 50%. And yeah, you wouldn't start with 10x4 minutes. At 10x4 minutes is also, it's definitely achievable for an intermediate level athlete, maybe not for a beginner level athlete, for a more beginner level athlete or somebody who's a bit lower on training load, chronic training load. I would maybe go up to 8x4 minutes. For a beginner or intermediate, you could go up to between 10 to 12 once you have done a good progression, a good gradual progression. And for a more elite level, you might go all the way to up to 60 minutes, potentially of threshold work. So 15x4 minutes, but that would definitely be somebody with a good chronic training load and a longer progression to get there. So yeah, you could also play around with progressing the interval durations, of course. So doing, instead of 10x4 minutes, you could do 7x6 minutes or 5x8 minutes or 4x10 minutes, always with that same 3:1 work to rest ratio, or that's how I would do it again, even though, as I said before on the podcast, I do think that sometimes the importance of exactly how long your rest intervals are is, especially at least in this type of session, is not always that important compared to just accumulating time at the intensity that you're working on. So if you take a bit longer rest to do more work, I think that could also be a decent trade-off in this session.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I have a similar session later on.
All right, so then you can give your additional comments when we get to that session.
Nice. I mean, my next session three is also similar intensity-wise, but it's with a kind of low cadence flavor to it. So seated torque work, basically. And I like to use this quite often at the beginning of a threshold session, as similar to you described. And basically, the power would be similar, but I would reduce the rep. To be honest, let me clarify. As you'll kind of hear in my next session for threshold work, I would typically prefer slightly longer rep durations just for lactate to stabilize. But then when I do the low cadence torque stuff, I prefer to start with a little bit shorter rep duration for there. So typically 5x6 by 3x4 minutes at close to 90 to 95, maybe a bit higher percent of FTP. Can be up to 100 depending on the conditioning. And the cadence there, we're looking at around 60 RPM. So yeah, as I said, I like to use this as prep for longer threshold reps after. But yeah, I mean, the rationale, you kind of, the evidence supports torque work as a way to train the type 2 fibers, muscle fibers, right? It doesn't it's not clear cut that it's going to increase your threshold or FTP, but it's going to train those type 2 fibers and hopefully make you increase your durability. So it's hard to quantify, which is why the evidence potentially is not as clear cut there, but it's, I think, well worth having in the program. And yeah, I you can use them kind of year round as a bit of a staple, but I typically would maybe do a little bit more towards the kind of mid of the build phase. And but yeah, I again have used them year round depending on the use case.
Yeah. No, I also use very similar types of torque sessions and agree with all of that. And I guess we shall see whether I have one on my list or not. But I don't think I have anything else to add. One thing actually, just for, let's say, more beginner type athletes, make sure that you have a decent bike fit before doing these sessions. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's, I mean, for example, in my ready-made training plans, I have, in the base training plans, for example, I do include quite a bit of torque work. But the first note that I write after the actual session prescription is to make sure that you have a good bike fit, because it can cause knee issues if you don't have a good bike fit done there. So be a bit careful with that.
Yeah, this is why I'm a bit more careful with loading in terms of total time and rep duration as well with that. And it's better to start. You see coaches or you see programs where they're prescribing, you know, 4 by 10 minutes, 4 by 15 minutes or whatever at kind of low cadence. And that's a mega amount of force that you're putting out. And so I'm definitely a little bit more cautious there. And I like to tag them on to the front of more classic threshold sessions and have a bit of a slower progression.
Yeah. I mean, I think you mentioned like that some of the evidence is, it's not so clear cut, which, yeah, that's definitely true. There's not, but you know, there's that mechanistic underpinning of muscle recruitment, but in terms of outcome measures, there's less of it.
Yeah.
But I think what does exist is, there's a long history of torque, using torque work in training. And I think there is a growing trend that more and more people are seeing anecdotally that they are effective. So they are, from what I've seen over the last, let's say, 10 years or so, I think that they are much more used now than they used to be. And I think it's just because people are seeing that they are really quite effective. Yeah, okay. My number three then is kind of a micro interval. I would classify it basically as a micro interval session. Also from the Rennestad group, but it's not the 30-15s. This is the 40-60s, where you do the 40s. So you do four intervals that are 5 minutes each, but each 5 minute consists of 3 times 40 seconds on, 60 seconds off, where the ons are around 120%, 115, 120%. And the offs are just at or just above FTP or critical power, so 100 to 105%. So you're basically, it's not rest, obviously, but you're not continuing to accumulate lactate, and you're kind of just barely stopping the rapid fatigue accumulation there. So
are you sure you are at that when it's still at 100%?
Well, yes, you're able to finish this session. It's definitely a hard one. I think it really depends on the day whether it's harder or easier than the 30-15s. Because the 30-15s, when you do the 13 reps, that's 9 minutes 45 seconds that you're on off, and even though the offs are 60%, that they're so short, those 15 seconds, that it feels almost as if you're doing 30 seconds, always at very high intensity. The 40-60s, you're only doing it for 5 minutes, so instead of 9:45. So yes, the offs are much harder, but there is a bigger or there is a smaller time duration that you need to work for. So you almost as soon as you start, you can almost see the light at the end of the tunnel of getting some rest for the next one. So yeah, it is a hard session. I honestly can't say which one I think is harder or easier, but I like to mix it up and use both of them, maybe alternate a bit, because I think they're both really excellent sessions. There's slightly less science on these 40-60s, but there's still some very decent science showing that they're really good at accumulating time close to VO2 max. So that is, yeah, basically, it's just another really good session for when you want to train your VO2 max. And I would use 1-to-1 work to rest ratios here, so 5 minute rests between reps.
Nice. That's a good session. I might give it a go. So my next session, this is number 2. As we touched on, it probably won't take me too long for this one. It's a more of a Norwegian style classic threshold session, basically. So looking to accumulate, depending on the level, a little bit more work than your threshold session. It could be up to kind of 80 to 90 minutes for more elite athletes, but typically a 6 by 10 minutes would be a pretty kind of middle ground there, and the power would be a little bit less, so more 88 to 92% of FTP. And the slightly longer rep kind of accounts for the slightly lower power, but also just gives everything a bit more of a time to stabilize. Recoveries, we're looking at, it doesn't need to be much, still can be similar to the shorter reps, just because the power is a little bit lower. So 1 to 3 minutes is usually sufficient. And if it's not sufficient, then I would say that you're going too hard with that. And yeah, it's not only going to kind of push the threshold up from below, but it's a bit more specific as well to long course triathlon, right? So obviously not many people are able to push probably that close to the FTP in 70.3, but it's still going to push up your fractional utilization, and yeah, it's more of a triathlon specific threshold session, I would say, than a more traditional bike threshold work.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would just call that a straight up sweet spot session based on.
Yeah, it's just true.
Yeah, I think it's a very good session, and I agree, it's more of a, yeah, it's a nice balance between threshold development and race specificity. So it could even be a bridge between a little bit earlier working more on threshold, and then as you get towards your race specific phase, transitioning towards sweet spot work, and then maybe some pure race specific stuff like the one you talked about in your number 5, the 5 by 20 minutes. So yeah.
Good. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, my number 2 is the Dennistad 30-15s that you already talked about. So yeah, don't have much more to add there. Just that, oh, actually, we didn't talk about this, so let's make this the one talking point. Do you like to use erg mode or no erg mode when doing this session?
Yeah, erg mode.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
It's hard to execute with that, I think.
Yeah, especially on the turbo. If you're riding outdoors on a steady climb, it's possible. I think
that's a good point.
Decent session, but on the trainer, I would definitely use erg mode.
Yeah, honestly, that's a really good point, actually, and I should have touched on that with mine. I typically would recommend if you do have a long enough climb, it's a great one to kind of effort on the way up, recovery on the way down. It fits in really, really nicely. Whereas a lot of people struggle to find roads suitable for long threshold reps and stuff without interruptions. But this one maybe is a little bit more easy to find.
Yeah, you still need something that takes you 9 minutes, 45 seconds. I remember doing this session on the first climb towards Formentor in Mallorca. If you've been on our camp or been to Mallorca otherwise, they will know this. It's a very nice 3.2 kilometer climb at 6.5% average, and it's very steady, I would say. Not too much changes in the grade. And so yeah, on that kind of climb, I think it's brilliant to do this session.
Yeah, perfect. Nice. So number one for me, is it?
Yeah.
So this one is, I wouldn't even call it a workout, but it's probably the reason why we all got into cycling or endurance sport. And it's just, I'm just going to call it the adventure / exploration ride. 3 to maybe 6 hours on the bike, intensity wise, zone one up to even low zone three, but really not just the aim is not to stress too much about the intensity and kind of let the terrain lead the power that you have to push. There's kind of minimal structure in there. It's a good opportunity because of the length that you can go and explore new roads. And yeah, it's not only is it good fun, but it's also just in terms of duration, we're really getting a good conditioning to the kind of mental resilience and durability and kind of fatigue resistance that you need for a long course triathlon as well. So yeah, I said that the intensity is terrain led, but when you're pushing into the unknown in terms of the length of ride, you want to try not to push too hard, even if you got some steeper climbs in there, but not to stress too much about it. We're still looking for that purely aerobic stimulus that, you know, so not to be kind of too glycolytic or let the power climb up too much for too long periods. But yeah, so that's my number one. And
I loved it. And funnily enough, my number one, again, we haven't seen each other's list before or talked about it, but it's a long ride. Bonus point one, over distance ride. And over distance here, I don't mean over distance relative to your race, but relative to what you're used to doing. If you're typically doing 2 to 3 hours on the weekend, if you can stretch it to 4 to 5 hours once in a while, that's amazing. If you're doing 4 to 5 hours regularly, do a 6 to 7 hour ride. So, and bonus point two, if you can add some good climbs into that ride, like you said, I would be, you know, quite try to be controlled and don't get away, don't let the effort get out of hand there, because with the duration is the stimulus, it's not the intensity. But when you get some nice variation in torque and in power, for that's because you are going to be producing slightly more power going up climbs, even if you're trying to control it. So yeah, a long ride with some good climbs, maybe an over distance ride even. I have some fond memories of, actually I was training for an Ironman in 2020 towards the end of summer, and I did a training camp week, basically a solo training camp week, home-based training camp basically, or close to home anyway, here in Portugal. But I was doing across 6 days, I was doing one ride that was 200k, and then the second one was 210k, and then the third one was 225k. And I do remember coming out of that week feeling so amazing, feeling so fit, and having some really amazing sessions, going back to more regular training after that. Then unfortunately the Ironman was cancelled due to a resurgence in COVID cases at that time. Which I'm still bummed about, because I was in such good fitness at that time. But yeah, long rides, you just can't shortcut volume, can you? So that's probably makes sense that we both have it as number one or on our list.
The race that got away for you there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have a question. What's your take on cafe stops, coffee stops or just breaking up the long rides with long stops there?
I think it depends a bit on where you're in the season and how long the long ride is. When you're getting to those really long rides, you're doing six hours, then I think that you definitely can have a coffee stop if you feel that you want it, no matter whether you're close to your Ironman or not. I don't think it matters too much. And when we're in that range of, let's say, 3 to 4 hours, I would say that you can do that when you're farther out from races. But if you're closer to races, I would like to keep those rides continuous. And 5 hours is kind of, 4 to 5 hours is that sort of gray zone where it's, for me, a sliding scale where how close are you to the race, whether you should or shouldn't do it. So I'm not absolutely for or against, it depends on those factors, basically how long the ride is and how far out you are from the race.
I mean, in terms of the negative impacts of those longer coffee stops, what?
In terms of, I don't know, not negative impacts necessarily, but maybe losing out on just like the final, I don't think you're losing out on too much, but maybe the final 5% of durability because you took a 30-minute stop. I just think it's one thing if you stop real quick for 5-minute Coke and espresso. It's another if you stop and sit down for 30 minutes. Like I don't, when I talk about cafe stops in this context, I talk about the sit down order, like a pastry and a nice flat white or something, and it takes some time. I'm not talking about stopping at a gas station to buy more drink and food, which you absolutely shouldn't do if you need to.
Yeah, because I guess one of the goals of this is we gain like accumulation of kind of fatigue metabolites, right? And I guess if you stop for a prolonged period, then we're kind of clearing that, and maybe some of the adaptations are not going to be quite as potent.
Yeah, and even you don't necessarily figure out just how at what state your durability is, because you don't see what happens if you ride continuously for whatever the duration of the ride is. But what is your take on cafe stops?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think especially when they're sitting down for lunch for an hour, it's kind of just doing two rides, isn't it? I think a nice compromise though, because I think it's part of the culture, isn't it? And that's a big part of motivation for people. So a nice compromise for me is actually find a cafe that's, you know, 10-15 minutes from home and kind of have that as you do it at the end of the ride. So you're still kind of having that same, especially if you're with friends, you still have that same kind of connection, and you get more enjoyment out of the ride, but we're not really having the impact of having a long stop. And then it takes the pressure off as well, because you get the cafe legs, and if you stop for too long, you're kind of, the motivation starts to drop and you don't want to get back on. Whereas if towards the end the ride's done, and actually I find you get a bit more out of the coffee stop and you kind of enjoy it even more. So that would be my approach.
I agree completely with that. Yeah, that's also how I tend to approach it, or how I prefer to approach it, let's say. Okay, anything else to add? We both covered all of our sessions.
No, I think that was good. Yeah,
we should do the upwards and the downwards, by the way, like we did with the swim sessions.
Sure. So to upvote, you go. Can you think? You go first.
I'll give you my. If you give me your list again, just real quick, remind me.
So I had the 70.3 specific 5x20, the 30-15s, the torque reps, torque threshold reps, the Norwegian style threshold reps or sweet spot reps, and then the exploration long ride.
Yeah, well, obviously I upvote all the ones that I also had on my list. To be honest, I would upvote all of them, but I guess if I think about, I'm going to upvote your Norwegian style threshold or the sweet spot session, because I think no matter what event you're training for, no matter your profile as an athlete, I think that's a really useful session. Whereas a 70.3 specific session is obviously, that's more relevant when you're training for a 70.3. Even though it could be a generally useful session, but I would probably prefer to use a sweet spot session if somebody is training for Olympic distance or sprint distance, and prefer to use an Ironman specific session if somebody is training for an Ironman, if that makes sense. So that's why I don't choose that one. And I don't choose the torque session, just because anecdotally I still see that there are some responders and non-responders to that. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's definitely something that I try with basically all athletes, but some athletes seem to respond like not as well. So that's why I choose the sweet spot, which I think is generally a super useful session so that's why that's the one I upvote. And to downvote, it's either the 70.3 or torque. Well, I'm going to downvote the 70.3 specific session actually then, because I think that you could train for a 70.3 using just kind of longer sweet spot reps essentially. Even though I love that session, but that's the one I don't know.
That's out of the top five then. It's off the list, voted off the list.
Yeah. Okay.
And yours?
So my number five was the endurance ride with sprints, the Winfield Almqvist ride. Number four was 10 by 4 minutes at threshold. Number three was the 40-60s Rennestad VO2 max session. And number two was the 30-50s VO2 max session. And number one, the long ride.
Number two was what? Sorry, the 30-50s?
Yeah, 30-15s, sorry.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to downvote the 10x4 just because I think it's a hard way to get that amount of volume in a way. It's mentally it's a big session, but actually you're still only doing 40 minutes, so I would maybe downvote that. It's still a good session. And then upvote I'd upvote the 30-15s also. So,
it's kind of cheating.
okay. I'll upvote your number five then. I really like that session, actually. So that's the sprints and the endurance. I think there's a lot to be said, especially in the winter when, there's a lot of kind of aerobic volume being done. So it's nice to, even just from a kind of enjoyment motivation perspective, it's nice to just have something in there, and I probably don't do enough of that, so I'm gonna upvote that one.
All right, well, I think we'll not have we'll be straight back next week based on the interview schedule, so there'll be another interview in 2 weeks from this one, so let's get back and do our run sessions next week, if that sounds good to you, Jack.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm most excited about, probably. Running. Love running.
Same.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners. You can find the show notes, as usual, on scientificdriathlon.com. Remember to take the survey. It would be amazing if you can do that. So you can find it in the episode description or go straight to scientificdriathlon.com/survey. We'll take you directly there. Remember also that we are offering coaching services, training plans, and different products and services to help you improve your triathlon performance. If you feel that you could use some help, then definitely check out what we have to offer there and reach out if you have any questions about that. We would love to help you. And that's it for today. So thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.